Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, distinguished lecturer emeritus at York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this April 20th coronavirus pandemic edition of Vantage Point here on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. Appreciate that shout out from our station producer saying, yes, 7 o'clock, go out there and show your appreciation. We're in a scenario that we have never, ever seen before. We're going to talk about that here on our show today. But before we get started, a sober announcement. It is with untold sorrow and the most profound sense of loss that the December 12th movement shares that one of its founders, or one of the founders of the December 12th movement, Father Lawrence Lucas, has joined the ancestors. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Father Lawrence Lucas has joined the ancestors, a truly revolutionary brother, faith leader of the cloth, but he was really about praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. So we do here want to just share that with our audience. I'm sure many of you know it. I just feel obligated to also just wanted to just share that information. Secondly, before going on to the air today, I went online to give to WBAI.org, and I made a contribution of $100. Because we need the support. I mean, this is not solicited. Nobody told me to do this. I did this on my own. And so I hope I'm not violating any rules or any laws. But I made a $100 donation. And during the course of the show, those of you who can, I can. I'm retired. I locked up my, TIA craft stuff and all that, so it would not be affected by the virus of the orange man. I ain't rich, but I can afford to do $100 to support the station. I'm asking you that 10 other people who can afford to do so do likewise during the course of this show. Just 10 other people, if you would join the professor in making a $100 contribution, that we were $1,000. It can be like a lot more, but I mean, every little bit helps. We're in distress right now. So you can go to give to WBAI.org, and you can make that contribution to match the contribution I've just made of $100. I literally did it just before going on the air. I intended to do it, but I wanted to make sure that I did it. So I said it's happened, and it has happened. Today's show will focus on several areas. Number one, shortly coming up, we'll be listening to Monifa Mandela. She's with the policy table of the Movement for Black Lives. We want to explore sort of the background of the Movement for Black Lives and their policy position, but also the demands that they're making around COVID-19, this pandemic. And then, of course, we'll be joined by Chairman Larry Hamm, the People's Organization for Progress, and press release that caught my eye as I was doing some work the other evening. It said corona pandemic hits pop. So we want him to talk about how it's hit pop, what's happening in Newark, how the mayor's handling that situation, but also to talk about, is his campaign for Senate still on? We'll be talking to Larry Hamm. And then we'll be up on the soapbox. Yes, right. We'll be up on the soapbox again, and we'll be talking about a number of issues, and you'll have an opportunity to talk to us, give us your opinions, ask your questions, smack me upside the head if you want to, whatever. We're going to be on the soapbox for at least 20, 25 minutes at the end of the show. That's how we've been rolling lately. We hope that we'll have lots of participation today as well. But first up, joining us is someone with whom I have great admiration and respect. I've worked with her for so many years. Was reminiscing actually about this in the middle of the night last night. Actually, she is just an incredible, courageous and visionary organizer. Her name is Monifa Mandela, and she is with the policy table of the Movement for Black Lives. Monifa Mandela, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Well, Monifa, as I said before, I really was thinking about you a lot last night. I said, well, I've known Monifa for a long time. We've actually done a lot of work together for many, many years, actually. And I remember you really from the Malcolm X grassroots movement. Actually,
I still am.
Right, but the Malcolm X grassroots movement is a movement that I've have incredible respect for, and I think it is one of the organizations that has produced so many leaders like you. Many other organizations have come and gone, but there's a legacy here of the Malcolm X grassroots movement. So I'm wondering whether you would just say a bit about, you know, how you were attracted to the Malcolm X grassroots movement, number one, and who may have been some of your mentors. Why has this movement been so successful and generating, you know, very powerful and effective leaders like you?
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm like, oh, I need to make you talk about me before I go into any meeting. It'll be great. But, back when I was a student, there was an amazing mentor and elder in New York City who was Ahmed Obafemi, which
yes.
many people know of and were mentored by and were trained by. And he just did an amazing job of reaching out to young people all over the city to work with the New African Independence Movement, and not just kind of participate, but also to, you know, he developed leadership. And then nationally, other mentors like Chokwe Lumumba, who was originally out of Detroit and then became mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, Akinyele Emoja, and all of the activists at the time in the New African Independence Movement, which founded, and New African People's Organization, which founded the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, were my mentors. And they introduced us to the political prisoner fight, introduced us to a human rights framework in our work, and seeing how that tied with things like police brutality and all of the things that we were fighting at that time. So I would really credit Ahmed Obafemi, Baba Ahmed, who so many people in New York were impacted by his genius and his organizing and his training.
Right. And what was it? I mean, were you already active or what was it that, was there something in your background and so forth that sort of led you to become a part of the movement?
Yeah. I was born into the movement. My parents were activists. My father was a member of the Black Panther Party. My mom was an activist as a student. She went to Bishop College, and then when she came to New York, she was at Long Island University and was a social worker. So we grew up in a lot of activism. I mean, some of my early memories were attending a school called Weyusi Shule, which was an African Center independent school. And as an older child, my mom and Black women from buildings really all over Brooklyn launched one of the most successful rent strikes against the notorious landlord Spodak. Our building and many of the other buildings, had him as an owner. He was an infamous slumlord. They ended up making a movie about him because the judge actually sentenced him to live in one of his apartments. But so I was able to see as a kid, I wasn't born yet when my dad was in the Black Panther Party, but I did see their later activism, and I was really impacted by that. So as a student, you know, whether it was elementary school, high school, or college, you know, I stayed connected to activists. And I actually met Baba Ahmed through his daughter Aisha, because she was a friend of mine.
Okay. Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about, because it was instructive to me, because once Black Lives Matter exploded, people thought, I mean, Black Lives Matter was everything, but you're with Movement for Black Lives. There may not be any contradiction between them, but would you just say a word about sort of the distinction between Black Lives Matter and the Movement for Black Lives?
Yeah, absolutely. So Black Lives Matter, which is an amazing, powerful international network, co-founded by three Black women, including all of them I'm really close to. I love them and love their work, is an organization. The Movement for Black Lives is a coalition of organizations, of over 100 Black-led organizations, which also includes Black Lives Matter. So Black Lives Matter is a part of M4BL. There's no contradictions between those two entities. The different BLM chapters are very active in Movement for Black Lives. But Movement for Black Lives is just broader. So the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement is a member of Movement for Black Lives. Black Lives Matter is a movement, a member. Some people also know BYP100, which is the Black Youth Project. There's Dream Defenders. There's BYDI, Black Alliance for Just Immigration. It goes on and on and on. Like I said, over 100 Black-led organizations came together and formed the Movement for Black Lives. And that movement was formed in December of 2014. So a recent coalition, 5.5 years old now, but we've been holding strong and trying to build and expand that network so that we can advance all of our collective agendas.
And that brings us to the whole question of a policy agenda, because one of the things that, and I've been witnessing this and to some extent contributing to it with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, is we've been working as well as many other organizations with Movement for Black Lives, developed an incredible policy agenda that our audience may not be aware of. We talk about agendas, agendas, and agendas, but you went through a very intricate, very principled process of putting together a policy agenda. Talk to us about that.
Yes, it was a lot. We put together the Vision for Black Lives, and we looked across really all of the issues that impact our folks, whether it's housing, job stuff, health stuff, definitely the criminal injustice system. And we created a policy brief that looks at the problem. We use an abolitionist lens. For those who are listening who may not know what that is, you know, we actually believe that there should be investments in real community safety and real community health and a complete divestment into criminal punishment and incarceral structures. And so we use that overall value to look across all of the issues, and we put together this huge collective brief called the Vision for Black Lives. There's a section in there on reparations, which we had to, of course, have the advisement and the mentorship of NARC. But it really kind of was fielding from across the entire country a bunch of Black leaders and what the issues were that people were working on, pulled it together in one document so that anyone in any given place could say, hey, we're in Wisconsin. Let me look and see. We want to launch a campaign around, Black maternal health. We can go in there and we can see what the Movement for Black Lives position is on that and what our policy recommendations are for that specific issue. And in fact, we're in the process of relaunching the Vision for Black Lives. Because of course, every couple of years, you have to update it because so much changes on the policy landscape. I mean, for example, there's COVID, you know, so we have to have a bunch of policy demands around this current pandemic. Right. So the vision lies on our website, which is m4bl.org.
All right. And now this the immediate crisis, you just referenced it, this coronavirus pandemic or COVID-19 pandemic. Movement for Black Lives has come out with a strong set of demands around this pandemic, and I wanted to have you come on and talk about that. So would you share what the demands are of the Movement for Black Lives around this pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have demands that fall into five areas. And the first one that list is what we call the people first. And this is an economic justice demand. So we have been demanding since before the last stimulus package was passed that there be a priority of people over corporations, right? That the relief that comes needs to really go to folks, families, communities, local institutions, the places where our people have built and the places where we know we need to keep us safe and to keep us healthy. And, you know, that's a constant fight. As we saw from the last stimulus package, a huge amount of money went into corporations and bailing out and really putting profits ahead of people. So the people first is our key demand. We talk about everything from making sure that there's extended unemployment. And the thing that the Movement for Black Lives demands, which you'll see differ from other demands around economic justice, is we talk about people who are in the informal economy. Right. You know, a lot of our folks are engaged in economies that aren't attached to a tax return. Or they're gig workers, you know, the Lyft drivers and the seamless drivers. You know, there is a way that people kind of fall off the grid of what we call the informal economy. And so we want to make sure that the person that does, you know, that cuts hair but goes door to door, that those people are included in the stimulus. So the first demand was the people first. The second, which people have seen us posting a lot about, we call Free Them All. The real epicenters of the COVID crisis are the prisons, jails, and detention centers. In fact, just last week, a report came out saying that Cook County Jail and Rikers County Jail, they have, that's the epicenters of the epicenter. You know, right. You're more likely to get exposed to the virus in those two places than anywhere else in the United States, because if you look at their rate of infection. And so we knew that, you know, right before that data came out. So organizations have been demanding that governors let go, grant clemency to as many folks as possible in as fast a time frame as possible. We saw an amazing demonstration last Tuesday in front of the Queensboro Detention Center, which RAP was a part of the leadership of, release aging people in prison, where they did a car caravan and had families speaking, saying basically, let our people go from detention. All of these folks who are in jails, prisons, and detention centers were not sentenced to death, and so they need to be released so that that's not what their sentence ultimately becomes.
Right.
The third one is housing for all. Right away, when they started talking about shelter in place, you know, people like me in Brooklyn and our folks in rural communities and in places like Oakland said, but wait a minute, we've got thousands of our folks that don't have a home.
That's right.
You know, in New York City alone, on paper, we know it's more. They talk about 80,000 homeless in the city, right? That's a lot of people when you make a declaration to shelter at home that are left out of that, right? And we know they are empty units all over the city, and the same for other cities in the country. And so last week, because of political pressure, Mayor Bill de Blasio opened up some vacant hotel rooms. I think it was somewhere like 600 vacant hotel rooms for homeless families. But that is just a tip of the iceberg when you talk about there's 80,000 homeless people. So housing for all. The fourth of the five is free to vote. And this is really going to get key as we get close to November. As people saw now, week before last in Wisconsin, people had a choice to make. They could either vote, they had to risk their lives, basically, to vote. Or if they wanted to be safe from the pandemic, they had to relinquish their access to voting. We shouldn't have to make those decisions. There needs to be nationwide access to vote by mail, right? So the people don't have to put themselves in danger in order to vote. And our last one, we call it healthcare, not warfare. We find that so much is being dumped into policing. In fact, this budget, this recent announcement made here in New York by de Blasio was about like increasing police, but we know we need more healthcare professionals.
Right.
We need frontline professionals. You know, no one's talking about expanding the number of paramedics. We hear that EMS is overloaded, but you want to run, pour more resources into policing instead of healthcare. And so when you go to our website, you see, when you click each of those drop-downs, it'll explain in detail what we mean by that, you know, and give examples of how our folks are left out of the main discussion because of the conditions we live in, being one, outside of the formal economy a lot of times, and also we're already in over-policed communities.
Right. So now, as we run out of time, give us that website again where people can connect with the Vision for Black Lives and indeed see these demands, which are five very, very comprehensive, holistic, and powerful demands. I'll actually repeat them later on in the show because I actually took notes, and actually we have it on our IBW website already. But how do people connect with the Movement for Black Lives?
Yes, and I want to point out that IBW is a member and actually contributes to our policy demands. The website is M4BL, and that's the number 4. So M4BL.org. And if you click on there, it's actually one of the first things that pops up are our national demands around COVID-19. You can sign on to these demands if you're an individual, and you can also sign on to them as your organization. And we want to have this ready to keep pushing out to our members of Congress to let them know this is what black folks need and demand from the stimulus packages.
All right, Manifa Bandele, you are a phenomenal organizer, and I respect you and love you so much because, and you're representative of just the brilliance and genius of so many people associated with the movement for Black Lives, Black Lives Matter. We know that Maya Angelou's admonition that strong women and men and others keep coming, and you're a part of that. So we appreciate you so much. Thank you for spending time with us this afternoon on Vantage Point.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Okay. We wanted to get that moving. Now let's quickly shift to the distinguished chairman of the People's Organization for Progress. That's none other than Larry Hamm out of, he's out of everywhere, all over New Jersey. Chairman Larry Hamm, welcome to Vantage Point.
Good afternoon, Brother Von Daniels, and thank you for having me on your show. And I thank you for the work, the great work of the Institute of the Black World for the 21st Century.
Well, one of the things is, I was a true story. I was really working on something the other evening, and pop, there came a press release, I think it's Zayed Muhammad, and it said the headline was COVID or coronavirus pandemic or COVID-19 hits pop. So I said, wow. And then I read through it, and I said, woo. I mean, and reason why, you know, obviously I lament that in any regard, but also it's important because there are a lot of people who just don't think it can hit you or that it's hitting anybody. Some people actually think it's a myth. So, first of all, just share with us, you know, first of all, how you're faring, but secondly, how is the COVID-19 impacting pop?
Well, I'm faring well, but the COVID-19 virus has really had a major impact on members of my organization. And first of all, let me just say my prayers go out to everybody who has lost someone during this pandemic, to everybody who has a loved one that is either in the hospital or in recovery. And I also salute the healthcare workers who, in fact, are endangering their own lives in order to save the lives of other people. And it's just unfortunate that we live in a society that places profits over people and that, you know, in the richest country in the world, our healthcare workers do not have the adequate personal protective equipment that they need in order to do their job. But I salute them for the wonderful job that they are doing. With regard to POP, we have lost a couple of members during this pandemic. We have members who are in the hospital right now as we speak. We have members who are quarantined with COVID, but because they are not literally on death's door, the hospital tell them, you know, don't come to the hospital, you know.
Right.
And this is not just a question of, you know, some kind of hard-heartedness on the part of our hospitals. People have to understand that the Black community was in crisis before the COVID crisis. We were in a healthcare crisis before the COVID pandemic. And for the last 30 or more years, healthcare institutions in our communities have either been eliminated or hollowed out. So what do we have now? We have a situation where we don't have enough hospitals to serve the people who have been stricken with the COVID-19 virus. So we have members who were told not to come to the hospital and to quarantine at home. And then we have members who have lost
family. Hey, would you speak up a little bit? You're not sound. You're coming through not loud enough.
All right. Can you hear me now?
That's better. Yes, that's better.
All right. Yes. So I was saying that, you know, we have members who were stricken down and, you know, died as a result of COVID-19. And we have members who are in recovery in the hospital. And we have members who are quarantined at home. They have the virus, but because their symptoms are not serious enough for the hospital to admit them, under normal circumstances, they probably would be admitted to the hospital. But I was just saying, I don't know if the audience heard me or not, but the black community and urban communities were in a health care crisis before.
Yeah, we got
COVID-19.
That part. We did hear that part. Okay. We did hear that.
All right. And we've had members, and I'll just finish up by saying that we've had members that have lost family members, lost mothers, fathers, grandparents, and so on. So my heart, my prayers, my meditations go out to all of my members who are suffering in one way or another as a result of this pandemic.
Now, would you say a word about, you know, you have a governor there, you obviously the mayor, there's different things happening around the country. How is Mayor Roz Baraka handling the situation in Newark in terms of instructions, clarity of instructions, and, you know, how are people responding?
Well, from where I stand and from where I sit, I think that Mayor Baraka is doing the best job he could do under these circumstances, and people are responding. In fact, they've started something called Stay-at-Home Mondays, where they're asking people not to leave the house at all. And I have to say, you know, with the few travels I have had to make out of necessity to Newark, that, you know, it's like a ghost town.
Mm.
You know, the mayor has implored people to stay home, and it looks to me like people are staying home. And he's asked people to wear face masks. And I have to say, you know, over here, folks are taking this thing pretty seriously because everybody I run into has a face mask on. People are now more with greater frequency. You see people with not only face masks on, but with gloves on. The convenience store, the Exxon gas station that I went to today, had a sign up on the front door that said, no mask, no glove, no service. That is the sign on the door. So you can't even go in there. So, and plus the mayor updates the people on social media. He talks for about an hour or so every day to the people, giving them the latest updates and latest instructions. So I think all things considered that Mayor Baraka is doing the best. I really could not conceive of someone actually doing a better job under these circumstances, because, you know, the city, of course, has its procedures in response to the crisis, but we're also under state and federal guidelines. And so with all that, taking all that into consideration, you know, he's doing the best he can to save people's lives, because that's what it comes down to. People think this is a joke. They think it's not real. They think it's something made up. Go to these hospitals. I mean, when we're at the point where the county of Essex has to set up a testing station in the park because they can't do it at the hospital because the hospital is at capacity, when University Hospital has to bring in freezer trucks to put dead bodies in because people are dying in such frequency from this thing, is serious, brother. In fact, it's so serious that right now the United States, who could have ever thought of this, the United States is now the epicenter of the worldwide pandemic.
Right.
New York State is number one of the 50 states, but after New York, a close second is the state of New Jersey.
Right. Well, Chairman Hamm, as we conclude the interview, the other thing that people are obviously interested in, the political season has kind of slowed down. But what is the status of your insurgent run for Senate that some people might say is maybe even more urgent now, given some of the kinds of issues that need to be illuminated, given the coronavirus pandemic? What's up with
our campaign is going forward. Now, we had to make a shift, and it was a little difficult for some of us, you know, baby boomers who weren't born during the technological revolution, you know, but we had to move our campaign, you know, from a door-to-door campaign to, in fact, an online campaign.
Right.
And so we have duplicated all the activities that we were having person-to-person. We've in one way or another duplicated these online. So every day we have information going out to people individually about the campaign online, on Facebook, on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all of those. And then we have and have been having, in fact, this weekend was our fourth virtual town hall meeting where people can tune in. It's a video live broadcast, and people can tune in and not only watch, but also send in questions for me to ask. This is we do it every Saturday at 2 o'clock. We have a campaign teleconference every Sunday at 1 o'clock, and we're doing a bevy of activities, on other people's activities, where I'm invited to speak and, you know, talk about the campaign. In fact, tonight I'm doing something on Reddit at 7 o'clock. There's going to be a forum on marijuana legalization. And, of course, you know, one of the many planks in my platform, one of them is legalization of marijuana, but not only legalization of marijuana, exoneration for all those nonviolent offenders, you know, who have been incarcerated, expungement of their records. And if there's going to be a marijuana industry, then the black community, minority communities, poor communities should have access to capital so that they can get in on this, what will right. be multi-billion dollar business at the ground floor.
Right. So it's fair to say that the campaign is alive and well, and that's what we wanted to at least let people know,
yes.
because right now
yes.
things are slowing down.
Yes.
Chairman Ham, got to move on.
Let me give the website.
Please, quickly.
That's right. www.hamham. Senate.org www.amforsenate.org. You can hit that up, make a contribution, sign up to be a volunteer, and learn more about the campaign.
All right, it's popping. All right, Chairman Ham, appreciate it.
Thank you, Brother Ron Daniels. Thank you, sir.
All right, those are our windows for today, and you can line up now to get ready to get on the soapbox, 212-209-2881. 212-209-2881. My soapbox comments for today are going to be...
Professor, I'm sorry to interrupt you. That number is actually 212-209-2877.
Oh.
Yes.
I'm looking at the wrong. I'm in the wrong place. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
No problem.
212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. I'm glad somebody's here to rescue me. First and foremost, though, we want to remind everybody, please match my donation for $100. 10 people, please. There are 10 people out there who certainly can afford it. Match my donation of $100 to the station today by going to give2wbai.org, give2wbai.org. On the soapbox, we have an infant in the White House. We have an infant in the White House. An infant who is calling for insurrection. We have never seen anything like that. Could you imagine Barack Obama telling people to liberate this state, liberate that state in the middle of this pandemic because this child, this idiot, wants to open up business? And what does this really mean? One of the supporters I saw him when the demonstration said, first of all, it's a fake pandemic. We got some members in our audience who think it's a fake pandemic. You just heard Larry Ham talk about it. You just heard Monifa Bandelli talk about it. This is not fake. This is real. Somebody else in there said, well, they interviewed him, said, well, you know, the cure is worse than the actual disease. And the person said, in effect, you know, you're going to save thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, when it's going to hurt millions of us. Just listen to what that means. That person was saying, we are willing. And, of course, unless it touches his behind and his family's behind, I don't know why he thinks he is immune or his family's immune. But setting that aside, tens of thousands of people should die so that corporations can make profit, so you can have a job. We want everybody to have a job. And maybe some of the people out there now who don't understand what socialism is about, maybe they will understand what socialism means more now. We need to socialize the ability of people to have work, to have housing, to have health care, to have education, a clean environment. Maybe some people will understand that now. And so this idiot, this is criminal negligence, and it cannot be tolerated. We cannot sit back and allow this is happening, this to happen. But of course, there's other, you know, questions we got to ask. You know, is there a danger now as we look at this whole thing of opening up too soon? What are the hazards? What's going on here in terms of possibility of opening up too soon? The other thing I want to just speak to is addressing the pain. Why protest and voting and elections matter. The fourth point of the Movement for Black Lives platform, and they were ones, kind of last time, some of the folks are not so in, free to vote. Be free to vote. Somebody is going to make a policy decision. And when you see what's happening in the Congress of the United States right now, the tension between Main Street and Wall Street, you know, people who are fighting for average, ordinary people. They may not be the most revolutionary of all time. That's our job. That's our job. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We're on the soapbox. You can call. But we're gonna tailor these questions a little bit. It won't be just a free-for-all. 212-209-2877. Healthcare. Food. People are lined up, I mean, like forever. Some of these people have never, ever have to go in line for food like this. They're in lines now. 10,000 in San Antonio last week and one on one day. A living wage. So I was on a program the other listening in. The minimum wage hasn't been increased. It's what, about $9 an hour, $8.50 an hour? Who can live on $8.50 an hour? It's like $13,000, $14,000 a year. I mean, a living wage. And people are only talking now about $15 an hour. You have to have your eyes wide open about who is doing what, even as we push for more radical revolutionary changes in this society. So the question is, I'd like to get your attitude. What is your attitude towards these protests? We had a caller last week who was pretty strongly saying, yeah, I don't know, you're taking my rights away from us. Yeah, well, you know, I have some concerns about these surveillance cameras and the whole question of these apps that are coming out with Google, and they're combining to give you this app that will track it and so forth. Then we have to have some concerns. The other question is, what do you think? Are you ready? Is New York ready? Or anybody, is New York ready to open up for business? I'd like to hear your opinions about those questions in particular. 212-209-2877. We're going to write to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on the soapbox with the professor.
Hey, good afternoon, professor. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I got some answers or some statements to both of those questions.
Yeah,
I work at FedEx, okay? Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm a package handler.
Right.
And it's about 20 people or more in that building that have gotten this virus. Okay, I've seen people go out, and so far only one has returned. Okay? So for those people that were protesting, come work at FedEx. Come on, take a shift. Mm. And for those people that want to open back up, come work at FedEx. And for the people that are sitting at home with 20 credit cards and bored and just buying stuff for fun, please stop. I don't have any problems with people that the diapers, milk, whatever, things that people need. But when I'm over here processing trampolines and all kind of foolishness, deck supplies and chairs and lawnmowers, hey, somebody has to touch that, okay? And those same people also have to go home, okay? And we're not making very much money. In fact, FedEx just offered us an extra $30 for our lives. They said, hey, here's $30 more for putting your life on the line.
Now, let me just mention that a point there, because I'm trying to also make a point to people who don't think elections matter and all that kind of stuff. There is a particular party that is pushing to get each of people like yourself on the front lines, essential workers, an additional $25,000 for hazardous pay. Because you are putting yourself on the front lines, my brother, and we appreciate your courage, the fact that you have to work. Hopefully you're protecting yourself, but you said some very poignant things in terms of how this is spreading. Some people went in and they ain't came back out. Brother, we thank you so much for contributing here on the Soapbox today. Thank you so much. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. What do you think about the protest? Is America, is New York ready to open yet? And the whole question of voting and protesting is an essential part of this process. Let's go to our next listener. Good afternoon. You're on the Soapbox with the professor.
Good afternoon, Professor. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, and you?
Good, sir. My point today would be, and I'm hearing everything that everyone is talking about, my point that I'm not hearing on the news or seeing is the mistreatment of the African people in China that's going on. No one's mentioning that. These people aren't allowed to go into supermarkets. They're being taken out of their apartments, put on the street. We don't treat them that way here, which we shouldn't. I agree with that. But no one, no news, NBC, ABC, no one's speaking about that mistreatment that's happening to the African people in Africa. Any comments on that?
Well, no, it's the African people. Well, there's a couple of things happening. There is, in fact, some of us are organizing the Samuel D. Witt Proctor Conference, leading faith organization is circulating a petition which the Institute of the Black World 21st Century has signed off on, because in China, the diplomatic corps in China is being treated in a very discriminatory manner inside of China, and that is being protested. Now, as it relates to what the Chinese are doing in Africa, that I have not heard that part of it, but clearly voices are being raised because, you know, the African Diplomatic Corps, I happen to have read it. I hope to put it up on the website. We just need to format it and get it up there, where they were saying, with all due respect and that, all that diplomatic language. The bottom line was they were being terribly treated by the Chinese. So we appreciate you sharing that information. You're absolutely right. We need to hear more from that. And that's why I'm glad you were able to get on the Soapbox today. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Got some open lines. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on the Soapbox with the professor.
Hi, good afternoon. Mahalo, Professor. I'm calling from Honolulu, Hawaii.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Just regard to the COVID virus, so far there's in Honolulu and Maui and the other islands, it's the total deaths have been about less than 100.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Honolulu and Maui and the other city and the other islands, the population is not very large.
Okay.
So it's been much smaller, but... you know, regard to the Chinese,
let's go back. Let's go back to what's happening in Honolulu.
Okay.
So, but I think the point that people are trying to make, it may be small, but whenever people travel and move around, this virus, like none other, is particularly infectious. And so someone moving from island to island can just spread it. And it's asymptomatic. That's one of the things that people are finding out with some of the testing that's going on now. 30-40% of the people who were tested in the Cook County jail were asymptomatic. They had gotten it. They were over it, had no symptoms whatsoever. The whole lockdown that took place or quarantining of what happened up in New Rochelle with hundreds of people, maybe not hundreds, well, scores of people, was from one person. Who got off, I think, a cruise ship. I may be misstating the facts there, but it was one person who spread it. So the point is that it doesn't take much for it to spread. So everybody needs to be careful. All of these places need to be doing social distancing and taking precautions because this is a monster virus. Make your last comments quick before I go to my next caller. All right, let's go to my next caller. And others can call. Got some open lines, 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on the Soapbox with the professor.
Hey, good afternoon, Professor. Thank you for taking my call.
Speak up a little bit, would you please?
Oh, I'm sorry. How about now?
Now, much better.
We're dealing, as you said, with a president who has no idea what the hell he's doing, and he won't admit it, but we with eyes can see. He only wishes he had half the brains as President Obama. He has no idea what he's doing. He cannot go out there and do his little shtick that he does, you know, in front of those rallies. So what the, his second best thing is to do these silly little, you know, and at the end of the day, for which he stands up there and makes himself out to be a, well, he pretty much shows himself to be an idiot.
That's right.
He, you're dealing with, I mean, you're dealing with between that and his, he's really talking to his crowd.
That's right.
It's who he's talking. He's not talking to the rest of us. He's talking to the morons who believe it's Obama's fault. It's everybody else's fault but mine. He has these people who are running out, as you were talking about, to those rallies, those people who are protesting that I'm hearing about and that he's urging on, half of which is stuff that he hears on radio stations or television stations, and then he repeats it in his tweets. Those people, to me, when I hear them, they're being led, to me, by a bunch of folks who will say to them, the Laura Ingrams and the Hannitys and the others, yeah, go out there and protest and take back your country. But none of those people I mentioned have any intention of taking their behinds out there. They don't want to be anywhere near those people.
Right.
If you catch my drift, they're like, let the morons go, and then I'll talk about them and urge them on my radio show, on my, you know, on my television show.
Yeah, and with the intent, by the way, of doing something that some of our people don't think is important. Trump is being very deliberate about an electoral college map strategy. He wants to energize his base to turn out and vote so that we can have another 4 years of this idiocy and insanity.
Thank you.
They are going to vote. Everything he does is to energize his base. And it is a tragedy. One of the great tragedies is exactly what you said, that we have people in this country who are so ignorant, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way. They are so lacking in knowledge, and are so, or they are so infused with homophobia, with racism and anti-immigrationism and nativism, all of these diseases, that they'll fall for the okey-doke. A lot of these red state folks are suffering more than anybody else. Some of them are in deeper trouble, but they're willing to go out here and follow somebody like the Orange Man. My brother, appreciate your comments. Got to go to another caller, 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Got five more minutes. We can get at least five more callers in on the soapbox. Good afternoon. You're on the soapbox with the professor.
Are you talking to me, professor?
Yeah, you're on the soapbox.
Am I on?
You're on the soapbox.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, sir.
It's quite obvious that Mr. Trump and his cronies have no history of what went on prior, especially the one dealing with 1918, in which several states opened up earlier, particularly San Francisco, and they had even a second wave of the flu, and it killed many people. As we know, the flu, I believe, in 1918 killed up to 100 million people worldwide. This clown in office and some of its members of the administration, they have no knowledge of history. It's really pathetic.
It is.
And many of his base are just as clueless as he is, unfortunately.
But it's so dangerous. It is so dangerous. Let me just say parenthetically, I have vivid memories of my father talking about I think more than half of my family on my father's side, his sisters and brothers were wiped out.
Wow.
By that pandemic that took place. And you're right. You know, you can, and there are lessons to be learned, and you got people out there, these protesters saying, lock up Fauci, lock up the people who are the medical, lock them up. I mean, can you imagine this? It's incredible. Look, yeah. My brother, appreciate your call. Thank you so much. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on the soapbox with the professor.
Good afternoon, Professor Daniels. I'd like to thank WBAI for giving us this opportunity and continuing to bring us the truth. I agree with everything you're saying. And one of our other callers who said, let them go out there and do the work. Let them go out there and take the job. I want to see them do that, number one. Number two, I think it's time that probably we went back to when the Young Lords were around, the Black Panthers were around, and we take over ourselves, need to grow our own food. So we really do need to stand up. We need to rise and stop this crazy hatred and the racism. You were right when you just said this, that these people are voting against their own best interests.
That's right.
It's unbelievable.
But let me quickly say something that you've said that I think is going to be different moving forward. There's been this whole thing about globalization and regionalization and all that. I think you're right. More and more people, and certainly I think black people, communities of color and so forth, we really need to be talking more and more about how we look at self-sufficient and interdependent self-sufficient strategies. And small businesses, I read a very interesting article the other day. It was very, very telling, talking about local small businesses and how these local personalized businesses, how they contribute to the community, how they give to the community, as opposed to these corporate entities, which are very impersonal, don't really care much about. I think we're going to have a change of mind. So out of this tragedy, unfortunately, maybe on the other side, if we work hard, we're going to change the face of what this country looks like. Look, appreciate your call. Got to move on to my next caller, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're the final caller on the soapbox.
Hello.
Yeah, you got 30 seconds.
Okay. As an African, I'm offended that you bypassed very briefly the concerns of our people in China. It wasn't until your governor, Cuomo, put the face of this corona on black people that this incident occurred. Okay, I have cousins that were put out of their homes that they paid for. So I think you need to focus on that rather than just shift it. The way you did it was very cold, brother.
Look. This is the soapbox. We have a short period of time. I talked about what is being done about it. I'm focusing on this through the Samuel D. with Proctor Progress. Believe me, we're focused on it. Appreciate your call. Look, folks. We appreciate people coming up on the soapbox. And let me just say, I hope people in this last minute will also hear what I said earlier. I contributed, donated $100. $100 at the beginning of this program. I asked that 10 other people contribute to that. There's some who obviously cannot do it. Those who can, the station needs it. This was my gesture. Nobody asked me to do this. Did it voluntarily because I know we need it. So go to give2wbai.org. Give2wbai.org. And, of course, give your donation, hopefully match that donation of $100. I hope we get 10 people. That'll be $1,000, a great contribution to keep this station alive because we need to keep you alive. We need to keep the company alive. This is what we do at WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Dial here on the Pacifica Network. This is The Professor. We'll see you again next week here on Vantage Point.